Hey, Brad, thanks for doing this. We really do appreciate your time here. First and foremost, how's your family doing in this difficult time?
We're doing okay. Hopefully you guys are doing well too, but no, we're doing good. Everybody's hunkered down. I have started to, as Berkey knows, I got a wife and two daughters, and I've limited the congregating now to parties of no greater than one, because I think they're starting to feel some conspiracies are starting to happen that they're trying to, they're sick and tired of having me around here. So, but all good down here.
Yeah, you're outnumbered. I understand that. All right. Well, I'm glad to hear the family's doing well and hunkered down like the rest of us and doing the responsible thing. Before we get to the hockey aspect, I was just talking to Anthony Stewart and Berkey, and we were sharing our sort of celebrity moments where you've met someone outside the hockey world. What about you? Is there someone you've met in your time? You know, you must come across a lot of pretty high, powerful, interesting people outside the hockey world. Is there a celebrity sighting you've had in your time that's kind of left you in awe a little bit?
You know what? One of the, I think it was our first year in Calgary that we went to Washington. Berkey, I can't remember if you were there or not. And I saw Obama, a group of us. He was going to the Capitol. I think he's either going to the Capitol or going to the White House from either or. And we got to see him getting out of the limo and all the rest of it. So that's the first one that pops off the top of my head.
That's pretty cool. Berkey mentioned Bush.
Regular basis, I got to see Brian Burke, you know, on a daily basis. So that was pretty good stuff.
Berkey.
Tree, we've been focusing. We've had a bunch of GMs and coaches on the last week, and we've been focusing on their path to the NHL. How did you get to be an NHL general manager? Where was your first management job?
Wow, that's a good one. Well, mine was a little bit unique, as you know. I was a minor league player, and so I realized pretty early on that my playing wasn't going to get me too far, so I tried to get involved.
A lot of us knew that early on.
I knew that was coming.
Tell these guys about... Tell these guys about when I cut you.
Yeah. So Berkey brought me to camp with the Canucks when he was assistant manager there. And so this is way back when. And I'm a Vancouver kid. And so this was big times, getting to go to the Canuck camp. And in my mind, I wasn't going to the Canuck camp. I was going to play for the Vancouver Canucks. And, just skill and talent got in the way, but I get in there and I think what I've had is a pretty good camp, and I sit down with Berkey and he's like, you know what, kid, you've had a good camp, but right now we're going to let you go. And I said, well, you know, Brian, you know, I'm going to play. What are you doing? I'm going to play at that time. The team was playing the Pacific Coliseum. And I kind of pushed back on him. He said, listen, kid, the only way you're getting the Pacific Coliseum is buying a ticket. So good luck to you, and thanks for coming. But so I went on and played in the minors and played in Columbus, Ohio, actually, and learned and realized at that time that, hey, if you want to get involved in the game, you're going to have to take a different path. So I started working with the team in the summers and doing, you know, working in the front office. And that's 100 years ago. And it was eye-opening to me that there's a whole other world. You, as a player, you show up and you think that everybody just shows up at the rink because they're coming to watch you. But there was a whole front office there of selling tickets, selling sponsorship. You know, this was in the early stages of the East Coast League. So it was, you know, it was a real eye-opening experience. And the organization there at that time was ahead of their time, where we were getting, I think it was about 6,500 a night in the old Fairgrounds Coliseum and filling that arena. And so that was a real, you know, that was a real education for me of learning, you know, the business side of the business. And, you know, went on from there and got involved in a minor league and starting a minor league. But that was my first real introduction into, you know, even somewhat of a management role, but really just from a business working role outside of playing.
And what was your first NHL job?
My first NHL job was with the at that time the Phoenix Coyotes. So So we were, I was living in Phoenix, and had actually gone through an interview process with Pierre Lacroix for the Colorado Avalanche manager's job. I was running the Central Hockey League at that time, and had been contacted by Pierre. He was stepping down as the manager of the Colorado Avalanche, and I went through sort of the process with him and his owner, and Francois Jugera ended up getting that job. And, you know, it was coming out of the first log. I think it was in it was 07. And so they said, listen, we've got a, you know, going into CBA discussions, Francois had been here as an assistant manager, was you know, real knowledgeable about the CBA. And so, you know, they made that decision. But Pierre was real good and called me a couple days later and said, listen, there'd been a management change in Phoenix. And he says, I'm going to put a call into Don Maloney, who I didn't know. I'd never met Don. And he says, I'm going to tell him that we went through the process here, and he's going to need an assistant manager, and I'm going to put the call in for you. And so he was real gracious for doing that. And Don called a couple days later, and you know, I ended up getting hired to be assistant manager with Don. But I always tell him that, you know, at the time, the Central Hockey offices were in Phoenix. And as people know, we were going through some financial struggles in Phoenix. And I believe the only reason I got the job there is you didn't have to pay any moving expenses. You know, I was already in town, so it was an easy hire.
And then how many years as assistant GM before you got to Calgary?
And I was seven years in Phoenix, and then was fortunate enough to, you know, a guy in Calgary, you know, he went through his Rolodex and everybody else turned the job down. So he called me and said, listen, hey, do you want to, no, he, I was fortunate enough to have Brian give me a buzz and kept our relationship, you know, even going back those, you know, 100 years ago when I played for him at camp. And I'd always stayed in touch and always admired Brian and was real honored when you called and went through the process with him and joined the Flames back in 2014.
Yeah, we've been asking guys their path because I think people listening think you just pop into these jobs and they don't realize how much work goes into getting them.
Well, Berkey, you got to ask how much you made his first job like you usually do.
Oh, your first job as assistant GM, do you remember what you made?
Well,
we asked John Tortorella, and his first coaching job, he made $6,000 coaching Virginia in the Atlantic Coast Hockey League.
Well, I remember, I vividly remember, you know, in the East Coast League making, you know, I remember going in there, and it was Terry Ruskowski was the coach and GM.
Good guy.
And he said, real good guy, and he said, you know, we're going to pay you $275 a week. And I was like, $275. I said, I need $300. And he said, okay, so it's $250. You want to keep going in the negotiation? And I said, okay, $275 is good.
Brad, I wanted to ask, how is it dealing with like former teammates now that you're a GM? I saw that you played with Jason Christie and John Torchetti and, you know, Matt Oates, who's now as an agent. Is that previous relationship, does it make it harder or easier doing business now that you're a GM?
I think, Anthony, that it makes it easier. Like, it just, as you guys know, just having those relationships, and that's the one thing, I don't know if it's unique in our sport, but I do think it's unique. You know, we've all either played with somebody or played with a friend of somebody, and it's as big of a community as it is, it's a small community. And it's funny when you start going through and you start, you know, listing guys that you played with. And there's a lot of guys, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff and I were teammates in Brandon, in Matt Oates and I played together in Columbus. And you look, you know, you kind of look back and all the guys that are either coaching now or managing or, you know, in the agent business, it's a small fraternity. So I think, you know, and there's a lot of guys, you know, you meet as you get into it, but it's that network that you have. Until you really sit down and start thinking about it, it's bigger. It's a lot bigger than you think. And I think those things always help. You know, having a strong relationship, you'll have battles. It doesn't stop from cursing and yelling at each other when appropriate. But I think having those relationships is really valuable.
You didn't learn any of that yelling and cursing from me.
No, it was, there was a few things that were picked up too. When Berkey would say, okay, this is, you know, when you're doing a deal or you talk about different stages, and he said, once you hit the extreme profanity stage, a deal is right around the corner. So you're moving along.
And Kenny Holland was on the show yesterday, and he did talk about how he was mentored to get to the position he got to. He also had an incredible story about actually selling vacuums, and that almost was his destiny until a great phone call came his way to turn him back to the hockey route. But what about you? When you think about mentors, and I'm sure Brian's one of them, if not the prominent one, are there a few people who really helped blaze the trail for you and teach you some of the things that have helped you along in your career to get to this stage, Brad?
Oh, absolutely. And Brian's right at the top of the list. And, you know, I look at Brian and Don Maloney, you know, Brian, who's done everything in the game, right? When you really look at it, and from the agency business, from the league business, from team assistant manager and manager standpoint, you know, there's not a box he really hasn't checked. So I was really fortunate, getting into the league. And then, like I said, first having Don, who had been a longtime manager, been a player, and then getting to Calgary. And the real fortunate thing for me in Calgary, and, you know, it's one thing, I think, as you guys mentioned earlier, everybody's gotten, you don't just fall into these jobs, and you're going through a path and you're learning as you go. So every experience you go through, even going back as a player, prepares you. And I look at the time I spent as running a minor league, and you don't think about it at the time, but there's so many things that are transferable when you become a manager. But where I felt I was really fortunate is when I went to Calgary, being able to have Brian sitting beside me, because every experience that you have, like I said, there's a lot of things you go through. The best job in hockey is assistant manager, because you've got all the ideas. At the time, you think they're just brilliant. You think they're, why is he not listening to this wonderful idea you got? Then you get to the manager's chair and you realize how stupid most of your ideas were. And so to be able to have somebody that's sitting while you're when you're a manager, to sort of, you know, bounce things off, or who stepped in a lot of the potholes that you could, and they can say, wait a minute, there's a little bit of turbulence ahead, maybe take a left here. I thought that was just so, so valuable, because there's nothing like, you know, like the old saying, it's, you know, co-pilot's a great job until you really actually have to land the plane, and there's a big difference. And until you're sitting in the big chair and you have to deal with the issues, and you have to go through those experiences, having somebody there. So when Brian was the president of hockey operations, I thought that was a brilliant move. It allowed them to bring in somebody, who they believed in, but didn't have the direct manager, you know, day by day sitting in the big chair experience. And so I felt very fortunate to be able to have Brian, working along Brian for those first 5 years.
Tell us a little bit about your captain. We can't talk about the Calgary Flames without talking about Gio.
He's a real special guy. I got an opportunity to work with Shane Doan in Arizona, and to my mind, at that stage of my career, that was the best captain I've ever been around, and leader and individual. And Gio's cut from the exact same cloth. You know, he's just. And what makes Gio unique to me, what makes him so unique is his path, right? We talk about the path is, you know, this is a guy who's the reigning Norris Trophy winner, who we joke all the time. I mean, he's never been drafted in his life. I mean, he never gets drafted in the OHL. He's an undrafted free agent signing to, in the NHL. So he's, you know, he's he's just had to carve his own path. And you talk about a self-made guy in terms of just how he prepares, how he looks after himself. You know, it's often said that you want to have great people around your organization and as an example. And that's just, you know, this is guys the epitome of that. We ended up signing a couple of college free agents the other day, last week, and I talked to them about that. And part of our pitch and part of our you know, we talked about coming to Calgary is we think both guys have a chance to play, you know, aren't far away. But I said, you have a real opportunity to learn from, to me, one of the best, very best leaders in the game, but somebody that you can emulate in terms of the path. You know, people say, well, I'm a free agent, I had to get drafted. This guy did that. He went down the same path you did and, you know, was a Norris Trophy winner a year ago. So, and besides all, and then we see what he does on the ice. Besides all that, as you know, Burke, he's just a great family man, a great guy, great teammate, and I can't say enough about Mark Giordano.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit more about the two prospects that you got out of college and Connor Mackey and Colton Pullman?
Yeah, well, Connor Mackey, and I first of all, credit goes to Craig Conroy and Billy Powers. You know, I think there's times when the manager gets all this credit. We did some wonderful things. I talked to these guys at the end. The guys that did the heavy lifting are Craig Conroy and Billy Powers, who oversees all of our college work. And with Connor Mackey, it was about a two-year process. He actually came to our development camp in 2017 out of the USHL as he was going into college. And from that time to now, he's put on 25 pounds. He's a big man. He moves well. He just does everything well. When you say what kind of defenseman he is, he played in the power play, he killed penalties, he plays 5-on-5 against top players. So in the college game, he does it all. And I look at him as a guy that's big, rangy, mobile, can move a puck. We think this guy's got some real upside. So we're excited to have him. And like I said, the one thing with these college guys, and at the end of the day, that the college free agent game, there's a lot of people that get signed and there's not as many make it. We think these two guys really have a chance, and we think Connor, he could be pushing for a job as early as next fall. In Colton, a real, real competitive, hard-nosed player. And when you talk to the staff at North Dakota, and that's a really successful program, you know, Dane Jackson, who played for you, Berkey, Jax, you talk to him, who's been there for 14 or 15 years. He said this is one of the most competitive and the highest character players he's been around. There's been and that's high praise talking about a lot of the guys that have come through that program. But, you know, sort of a stay-at-home defenseman, moves the puck, but he's a guy who plays hard around the paint and has got some edge to him. And again, we think he's pushing. And, you know, the one thing with these players, as you guys know, coming out of college as free agents, is they're not 18 or 19 year old kids. You know, these are developed young men. So physically they're ready. Now it's a matter of seeing, you know, how the game translates and how quick they can pick up the pro game. But we're excited to have both.
And Berkey always makes the point, you don't have to give up a draft pick. It's free. It's free found gold for you if one of these guys sticks. So congrats on those two signings. Listen, Brad, before we let you go, I do want to ask one newsy-type question. You know, the league execs, the GMs meeting yesterday by phone, I just want to know, what was your takeaway from that meeting, knowing where we're at right now in this NHL season with this pandemic?
Well, the league does such a good job of keeping you up to speed. You know, Gary Bettman and Bill Daly are terrific at just, you know, making sure that you know everything they know. So I think they're always helpful. But the big takeaway for me, David, is just the uncertainty. And I think that, you know, in times like this, the league is no different than any other walk of life, is we just don't know. You know, it's hard for everyone, but I think it's hard for you know, especially on the manager's call, there's a lot of type A personalities. You want to have control of things. And we are so structured in everything we do. And like I said, you want to be able to be pulling the strings here. And this is, we have zero control over the situation. And that's the biggest takeaway here is I know, you know, the league is constantly planning on different ideas of, if we could start here or how that would look. But all of it is really, it's just speculation at this point until we can get, you know, everything. And when I say we, until, you know, the world can get this thing under control, we don't know. So that was probably my biggest takeaway, David. We're hopeful. I'm an eternal optimist. And, but, right now, there's just there's more question marks than answers, and so we do what everybody else is doing, and that's we hunker in, and we make sure we're all doing our part, and as I say to our group here and our family here, you know, as difficult as it is, and it's really difficult, and we're thinking of all those that it's the most difficult on, but this too shall pass. We will get through this, and hopefully. Hopefully that happens sooner rather than later.